Number one piece of advice I always give a seller, but even a buyer too, in any of these transactions, make the other person your best friend. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like them, make them your best friend.
Welcome to Business Strategy, where we are documenting the best strategies and valuable lessons learned to build more profitable and iconic companies. Please share and enjoy. Alex, it's so great to have an attorney on the podcast. Because as a CFO, I've done a lot of mergers and acquisitions. As an entrepreneur, I've worked with a lot of attorneys. I've had good experiences. I've had bad experiences. I've had deals where I've tried to close these deals out. And seriously, like the red lines were killing me. And along with the fees, because we were just going back and forth, back and forth. And at some point, I was like, we just need to get this deal done. So I'm glad to have you on the show because I want to hear your perspective. And I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have similar thoughts. So welcome.
Thanks, Steve. The first part, I'm so glad to have an attorney on a podcast, said nobody ever, right? I mean, no one wants to talk to an attorney. We're not the most popular people. And yeah, I hope to be not like other attorneys. So yeah, I'm excited to be here and get right into it.
Well, I'm excited to have you on because I'm going to grill you. That's why you're here. Little do you know.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the small business owner because, I mean, there are so many opportunities now for business owners to get online and they could do like Rocket Lawyer or some of these other just like fill in the blank forms. There's AI, which like is scary, right? If somebody's trying to get legal advice from AI. But when it comes to working with small businesses and just being in that whole space through your background and experience, what's the biggest struggle and the biggest pain point for small business owners who need legal advice and they struggle in this area?
Yeah, well, I always say, Steve, these deals, regardless of size, by the way, but especially in this space, are 90% human and 10% legal. The people are driving. So I have some buy-side clients who are like, how do we do more deals, right? We want to fund more deals. Let's go faster. I'm like, well, there's a big wild card here is seller personality-wise and seller's counsel. And so the biggest challenge, I think, is finding someone who matches, I'm going to say, your EQ, not high or low. Just the way that you want to approach the deal. Not every style is for everyone. I've got a whole kind of list of like the Alex, you know, operating system, if you will. But it's really about the people. I just can't handle the cognitive dissonance of taking an extreme buy side position, hanging up the phone, and then picking up the phone as a sell side counsel, taking the opposite position. Like, I just can't do it, right? Like an anti sandbagging clause, right? You're going to be silent. If you're a reasonable person, you'll be silent on that topic and move on, right? But I'm sure in your experiences, you've seen many lawyers who charge a lot more than my team that's based in the Midwest go back and forth on that for hours, right? It's like, this is a zero-sum game. No one's really winning. So I think finding someone that you trust, first of all, principal and agent, right? We are an agent. We should not be driving anything. No attorney ever closed a deal. The principals closed the deal. The attorney's there to advise and help. So you feel like you're getting context and experience shares, if you will, from your attorney, you're in the right spot. If you feel like your attorney's kind of telling you what to do, I don't know. That to me crosses line, or at least violates my kind of, you know, guiding principles, if you will.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, working with an entrepreneur years ago when I was like in my 20s, just first starting out in business, and I had this client. He's a very successful entrepreneur. And he said to me, Steve, there are two people that you need to find in your network and don't lose hold of them. Number one, find a really good attorney. And number two, find somebody who's really good at insurance. And so what are your thoughts on that when it comes to finding an attorney nowadays? How does somebody go about that? I mean, sure, you can ask your friends and or other entrepreneurs or business owners and say, hey, who do you use? But for those who may not have that type of network, what's the best way to find this trusted attorney that you're referring to?
Well, you already found them. You're listening to the podcast, Steve. You're all good. I'm joking. So tongue in cheek, right? That's a really good question. I think it's hard. For sure. I mean, number one, doesn't matter. You're looking for a CFO. You're looking for, you know, right, a key employee in any position. It's first your personal network, right? Because I worked with this person and here's the story. Done that in my other, I'm a business person first, lawyer second. In my other world, needed to find, you know, a technology leader. And that's what we did, right? You know, who's in our network? Who do we know? Tell me a story about this person where they're successful. So same thing there. That's always highest and best, right? But otherwise, I think, again, back to this, the human element is really driving these deals. Even larger deals, by the way, could be driving it because no one cares anymore because it's like the last portfolio company of a venture capital firm. Everyone's kind of checked out. Like, that's actually the humans driving, you know, the deal kind of dynamics. So I would say, I mean, it's like speed dating, I suppose, right? Talk to them. You know, the plaudits and, you know, Steve probably won't say this, but you have a very illustrious, educational background. I went to Notre Dame Law School, take or leave. Amy Coney Barrett was one of my professors, a future Supreme Court justice. Didn't know that at the time, obviously.
Right.
It doesn't do any work for me today. If you in your head are counting the minutes talking to the attorney because you know the bill is escalating, probably not the best fit. I mean, maybe get the deal done, but just maybe that's a heuristic. So I would encourage you to talk to these people. And do you like them? I mean, because that's such a huge, any building a culture in a company, these advisors, when it is kind of a speed date, it's very transactional, right? We're only going to work together for a couple of weeks, likely, if we're working on a deal, me or any attorney. Try to get to know them a little bit. Do you want to talk to this person? Do you enjoy it? If you don't, I don't know. What are you doing, right? Find someone else. You'll find someone.
Yeah, exactly. Because, as a CFO, when we're expanding our business out into Australia, I remember we'd be on phone calls, you'd just be on speakerphone and there'd be like these long pauses because you're just like, you're working, you're talking, and the phone calls would go on for, a couple hours sometimes. And the likability is so important when you're working with an attorney. I think that's critical. But let me ask you this. How do you know if an attorney is good? Like if I'm vetting out somebody in the financial space, since I have financial experience, I can ask them very direct questions and I'll know right off the bat whether or not they're full of it. Right. I could just ask them a question and say, hey, by the way, where do you find CapEx on the financial statements? If they're like, oh, the balance sheet, I'm like, gotcha, you're wrong. Okay, you don't know what you're talking about. But how does somebody do that and vet out somebody who's good from a capability standpoint when trying to source an attorney?
That's a really good question. That's a hard question. You weren't kidding that you were going to grill me. I think anecdotes are heuristics. And again, I say this all the time. How many times have you seen the movie? Right? And the more times, the better. And so this is me as entrepreneur operating businesses when I'm evaluating, like a new hire, for instance, but I think it applies to attorneys as well. So ask them for deals that they've worked on that sound similar to your deal, right? Because the first thing you're going to do is say, tell me about the deal, right? So you're going to talk about the deal and the value, et cetera. There are certainly deals that get structured, I think some of the ones that you're referencing, right? Which really do require intense, I'm going to call it subject matter expertise.
Yeah.
But most, if you're talking about small business lane, most small business deals do not require that. You do not need an environmental attorney to weigh in on 99.9%, right? So that subject matter matters less. But if an attorney isn't speaking to you in, I would say generalities, but that sounds, wrong. We're talking about the specific hard skills, if you will. But they can't tell you stories about how they did a deal that was similar and this was the approach and this was the outcome. I think that's a warning flag. I think you want to hear, I've seen this before, or even better, I've seen one or two of these like this, but let me ask some of my colleagues for a further, here's what I think, here's my instinct, but I'll go double check, right? I'll bring some other of the hive mind along with me to get even more data, if you will. And by data points, I mean stories, anecdotes about what's worked and what's not.
I like
that's gold, I think, to me, because that's what's happening. No matter how great your expertise is, you're really just pattern matching on things that you've seen in your experiences, right? And that's really how people are thinking in any context, regardless of how great their skills are, or how many books they've read, or how much they've studied, or what their degrees say, right? It's really, have I seen this movie before? And is this similar or different? If it's similar, do the same if it worked, or do the opposite if it didn't.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Let's shift gears here for a minute. When I'm working with organizations, I put in place a strategy for their company, right? So a lot of times they're an existing business and they may want to carve out one of their business units, right? Or maybe they need to create a new entity and they're going to go down a different direction with an entrepreneurial venture. So a lot of times the big question comes up, do you need to hire an attorney when you're creating a new entity that may not be the next, Coca-Cola or Google idea, but you're like, hey, I just want to, carve something out and put this rental property in a new LLC, or I want to just launch this LLC and we'll see where it goes. And then, we can beef it up later on. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that when somebody's like just getting started and they're doing a carve out or they're just forming a new entity in general?
Yeah. Well, the Corporate Transparency Act is a huge, red herring in all of this, right? So if the CTA is a real thing, and I say if because, the federal government's lost some court cases, but then they're interpreting it as they basically didn't lose them. So that's I'm going to put that aside, right? Because if that exists, it's a crazy sea change. Everything is really way much harder than it is now. That was bad syntax, but you get the point. Mm-hmm. So let's put that aside. The answer is no. You want a black and white answer, right? But there's a gradient here. So here's kind of my heuristic when you think about these things. Who's involved? The number of parties. It's just you? Or it's like a wholly owned subsidiary, etc.? This is leaning towards no, right? You go ahead, go do, Stripe Atlas has a, wizard, if you will, that will do it for you, so on and so forth. So the less people involved, the better. As soon as you have multiple partners, especially equity partners, right, you're more interested. Another kind of, I'll call it outside my lane, that, by the way, the best attorneys that are good are tax attorneys, because they send you an Excel and they go, this is how much money I'll save you on taxes and this is how much I'm going to bill you. The money you save is always greater. The best sales, you can't say no. Oh, yes, please. Like, yes, I would like to pay you all that money because I'm going to save. So your tax considerations are important too. And that is kind of a separate analysis, if you will. But these early stage things, I just wrote, a blog post. Everyone has a blog. Great, right? But about safe notes and convertible notes. And the conclusion was basically, you're a founder, entrepreneur. What are you wasting your time on there? I mean, the differences are so slight. I can talk to you about them. I can tell you, like, in these, one out of 10 scenarios, there's really a difference that you could consider. But you're so many steps down the line and removed from the practical reality. Like, the expected value, if you will, of understanding that in a detailed way, the discount rate's so high. What are you doing, right?
Yeah.
So there are definitely legal steps that you can take, if you will, that don't require an attorney to do it. You just want to form an entity, just go do it. There's a million different ways to do it. Spend a couple $100. You have a partner? Well, okay, now
different story.
You might think about that a little bit, right? Because you can get, just go on a tangent. This is an easy way to conceptualize equity is it's like a property right. Like, think about how difficult it is for even the government to remove, the last little lady on the block, right, to build a highway or whatever. Similar for an equity stake. If that equity stake is vested in someone's hands, unless you have, an escape route, a call option or whatever on it, they're not going anywhere. They're there forever.
Yeah. No, I like that. And that's good advice. Yeah. If you're going to bring on partners, simply put, you probably want to hire an attorney because you're essentially getting married and you want to make sure that everything's buttoned up. If you're just operating on your own, sure, you could go form an entity, get your EIN, set up a bank account, and bam, you're in business. I would just add to this and just add a little caveat here because I've experienced the painful side of setting up an entity incorrectly. So just for everybody who's listening out there, if I look around on TikTok or Instagram, not that I'm like scrolling those channels often, but you have these people on there, these talking heads, and they're trying to add quick value to their audience. Here's a huge misnomer that exists out there. And let's just kill this, okay? And I want to hear your thoughts on this too, Alex. But when it comes to forming an entity, the easiest entity to form is just an LLC, right? So you just form an LLC. By default, you're taxed as a partnership if you do nothing. But then accountants and other people will say, oh, you need to, convert file an election to be taxed as an S corp, mm-hmm. or you should set up an S corp. And if you do that, then you can pay yourself W-2 wages as an employee, and then you can take distributions, and then your distributions are taxed at a lower rate because you're not matching the Medicare and the Social Security.
Right.
And that's their whole pitch. And they're like, oh my gosh, we're so smart, that you should do this. If not, you're an idiot, basically. But then people will convert into an S corp, not realizing the implications. So I was working with a client, a while back, and they did that. They converted over to an S corp. Well, guess what? Their entity owned real estate. So now their real estate is in an S corp. And if you ever try to sell real estate as an S corp, it's like the worst tax structure you could possibly have. Or if later on down the road, you want to raise capital and you're an S corp, well, guess what? You can only have one class of shareholders, and there are limitations. You have to do equally proportionate distributions, so you can't do disproportionate distributions like you can with an LLC. You can't have an LLC as a shareholder of an S corp. You could only have individuals, and there's other implications. And by the time you get down the line, you're like, oh my gosh, if I go to reverse this, there are going to be some massive tax implications and tax triggers that occur. What are your thoughts on that, Alex? Have you had experience in this area?
And like 100, shareholders max, right? So what I like to tell my clients is that on the corporate side, you have a magic wand. It's consent, right? We can decide our internal governance, so on and so forth, even a contract with a counterparty, right? We got a magic wand. We can just go ahead, change it. So that's kind of a cool superpower. But there's just like the shadow world, like in Stranger Things, that exists on the other side of those corporate things. And that's the tax world. And those things, you can't go back in time. So when you talk about issuing, you know, equity incentives and so on and so forth, you can't go back in time. You can't reestablish the basis later. Like, there is a point in time decision that has to be made, and it is made. And you get into trouble real fast making one of those decisions. I'd see it a lot in early stage companies, right? In equity incentives, they go, oh, we should have made this 83B election, and, you know, when the company was worth nothing, and, you know, paid, you know, the income on, you know, the grant then, not later. Yeah. Why don't we just go back with a magic wand? Not the way the tax man works, right? So, yeah, in general, simple, go for it. You know, put the other end of that seesaw, exactly to your point. If you think you're starting to get clever, at least like have a beer with your buddy who's a lawyer or something before you start to get clever, so they can, you know, kind of let you know there's some trapdoors there, right? So yeah, that S-corp election is not a straightforward thing, and you have to be really clear about what your goals are and where you want to end up to check that box. And it is just check the box and move on. But yeah, you could paint yourself into a corner.
It's beginning with the end in mind, basically. And you can't just go on Google or ask AI what type of entity should you form, because there are a lot of nuances there. And it depends on where you want to go. If you're just going to run this like solely owned entity for the rest of your life, sure, maybe an S-corp can work. But if you're planning on raising capital later on, and maybe you don't know it in the early stage, but if there's the possibility, you want to be very careful about how you form your entity. So that's the startup phase and getting things going, forming an entity. Alex, let's shift gears and talk about exits. Because when you exit the business, when you go to sell it, or maybe you're buying another business, buy side, sell side, doesn't matter, you're going to want to involve an attorney. And this is where things can get really messy very quickly. It can drag on. There's a lot of complications. I've worked with good attorneys. I've worked with bad attorneys and everything in between. So I want to hear your perspective and advice that you have for entrepreneurs who may be planning for an exit, or maybe they're at that stage right now and they want to exit their business. What advice do you have for them?
Oh, I mean, you know, how much time do we have, right? In the same theme of 90% human, 10% legal, I've been saying that for forever, and I say it all the time and people make fun of me for it because I say it too often, but this is true, right? It's just like running a business. I always say the more, you know, kind of, you know, rotations around the sun you get, the more you realize what you think doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all, right? In a business, you're trying to sell someone. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you think the thing on the shelf is. It matters what the customer thinks the thing on the shelf is, right? And so same in the deal structure. Your seller, doesn't matter what you think about the business. I mean, you're going to try to persuade, don't get me wrong. It matters what the buyer thinks. And if you try to put yourself into the buyer's shoes, the number one piece of advice I always give a seller, but even a buyer too, in any of these transactions, make the other person your best friend. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't like them, make them your best friend. Because in every deal, something's going to happen that's bad. I'm never more nervous than we're 90%+ of the way through and everything's smooth sailing. Because you know at least one thing pops up. A lien, a this, a that. Diligence discovered something. You know, an unanticipated disclosure on the disclosure schedules if you're on the buy side, right? What the heck is this? And so everyone, you know, if you're on the buy side in particular, right? If a diligence thing comes up, especially later stage, you actually don't, in my opinion, from what I've seen, the person doesn't judge the thing, right? It's a lien that we didn't know about. Well, that could, you know, mean all sorts of other scary things about they're really not running a tight ship over there, right? How could they not know there's an all asset lien? It could be, you know, an regulatory investigation. They didn't tell us about whatever. It doesn't matter what the thing is, how big or how small, right? You know, their working capital calculations is wildly off. Whoa, that's a bad one, right? That's dollars in one person's pocket and out of another. Like, that's black and white. But what I have found is on either side, or buyer says, hey, I got to lower the purchase price like for these reasons. Or, whoa, that's horrible from the sell side. People don't judge the actual issue. They judge what their level of trust is in the counterparty. Mm-hmm. So this thing comes up. You have a really good, strong relationship. I'm not saying become their best friend for real, right? But have a good working relationship and mutual trust and respect. Work hard at that. Because when those things come up, there's really only two reactions. One, I trust this person, so I'm concerned, but we need to have a conversation about it. I'm just going to call them, right? Or two, this is a major red flag. And that's when you call the attorney to talk to the other attorney. That's not usually a productive, happy landing path, right? But that first reaction of, wow, this is probably disappointing to them too, right? I'm sure they didn't want this to happen. Why don't I just call them? If there's not baseline trust there, if you're really treating it very transactionally, as if you're not a repeat actor, which you might not be, by the way, you jump to the number two, the red flag. I'm not saying there aren't issues that are red flags, but you can start from the perspective of, I trust this person, let's get all the facts first. Or you can kind of go to DEFCON, you know, one immediately, right? So that's that human, that trust, that get to knowing the people, that's super important to getting any deal done of any size, you know, for a partnership, you know, or an M&A transaction, but especially the M&A stuff, because something weird always happens.
Yeah, I agree. Let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on earnouts?
If you're a buyer, you love them. And if you're a seller, you hate them. I mean, why? Here's the question.
I mean, should you avoid that? I mean, because...
Yeah, well, you know, if you're a seller...
I've ran into a lot of issues with earnouts, right? Like, you know, when we acquire companies, you know, there's always arguments, or you're trying to figure out the definition of revenue or operating income or whatever you want to talk about. I mean, there's so many complications and nuances. I just want to hear your thoughts on earnouts overall.
Yeah, a couple things. One, if you're a seller, just ask yourself this question. And it doesn't mean that you don't use them, by the way, right? But just ask yourself this. Know what you're getting yourself into, right? You sell something and they have it. And they're operating it, I mean, you know, on paper at least, right? Maybe you're still involved, but besides the point, they own the thing. They already bought the thing. What is their incentive to pay you more later for the thing they already bought? That's just a human psychology thing. It's not the words on the piece of paper. I understand the words, but what's the incentive? There's none. There's a good guy incentive. There's a Scout's Honor incentive, but they already have the thing. What is their, you know, I've talked about aligned interests. That's another one of my kind of themes, if you will, right? Understand what each party, you know, the win is to each party, and you'll be more successful because you'll know what they're trying to kind of engineer for. But why would they pay you more? Because they promised to. Okay, fair enough. But then when you get into that, there is so much that's outside your control, to your point. I mean, here's the best you can do. There is an Excel document attached, right? We have definitions in words, and we have an Excel, and we try to the best of our ability, say, you put this definite defined, you know, and there's a pro forma too, right? So here's an example calculation. This words translates to this number, and that number gets put in that cell, and this is how we calculate it. These are fun ways to argue about it. So the place for it is you really want to get a deal done, and you have a gap, right, in valuation. Buyer thinks it's worth one thing, sellers thinks it's worth another, and buyer basically says to seller, prove it. And my general advice would be, seller, you're going to try to work in every covenant possible to make sure that even though you don't own the thing anymore, you have the right to operate it the way you want to operate it to hit that number. But when you get into that, very few buyers are going to take that part, right? They bought it. It's theirs.
Yeah.
They want it. There's going to be some limitations. So there's all sorts of stories, right, which I think are very hard to win on, if you will, if you're a seller, where there's an earnout. Buyer owns it. Buyer says, this is the way we're going to run the company now. And seller goes, well, under those circumstances, I can never hit the earnout. And the buyer goes, it's mine, not yours. And it's very hard to contract around. The brain space I think that you need to be in is, I'm okay as a seller. I'm okay with the deal if I never got a dollar of the earnout. I would be happy with that result. Not elated, happy. If there's a possibility of getting too elated, great, right? But put a heavy discount rate on it, because again, you have, it's kind of as much Scout's Honor as it is whatever's written on the piece of paper, because incentives are all jacked up.
Yeah. Good advice. A lot of nuances there, but you know, this is exactly why we're having this conversation, and you have a lot of good insights, Alex, as far as like, start with EQ, make sure you like the person, make sure you feel comfortable with them, because there's going to be a lot that comes from a relationship with your attorney, a lot of value add when you're working with the right one. And I just really appreciate you being on the show and sharing your expertise on such a broad topic, you know, that we could go in all different directions, but I think it was enough to at least, you know, introduce people to this concept. And I'm just glad that you're here.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate the time and you having me on.
And for everybody who's listening, you can find more information about Alex Persaud. He is an attorney with Aegis Law Firm. And if you go to byfiq.com, and navigate over to the guest page, we'll have a page there for him. Once again, it's Alex Persaud. Look him up. We'll have links. We'll have his bio. We'll have a nice headshot for him. And if you want to connect with him, you can find all of that information there. So thanks again for being on the show. Thanks everybody for joining me for another episode. And until next time, take care of yourself. Cheers. Hey, real quick. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have business questions and you want to be featured on this podcast, send me an email at contact@cultivar.com.
and either type out your question or send a video or voice recording stating your name, your location, and what's on your mind. If you want to increase your financial intelligence, be sure to check out my other podcast called Boosting Your Financial IQ. All right, you have new knowledge. Go out there and execute. And until next time, cheers.